Hey there, real quick, before we start the show, at the same day that this podcast is being posted, I'm posting a new YouTube video as well. It's about homemade holiday cards, which I love doing. So there'll be a link in the notes for the show here. Just tap on the Garden Fork Radio logo icon thing. The text will come up, and it'll show the link to our YouTube video. So if you're listening to this, take a minute and watch. I'm jumbling my words. Anyway, there's a video coming out today at the same time the podcast is. So listen and watch and comment. Thank you. Hey, thanks for downloading the show. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. This is Eric, your host. I have a YouTube channel, Eclectic DIY YouTube channel, and this podcast. And thanks for taking the time to check us out. There's more information. If you click on the little icon, there's a bunch of text pops up, the Garden Fork icon. You can learn all about us there. But today, I have a Garden Fork Radio fan on, Danny, who did what I said and just emailed me a lot, and now is on the show. So welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
You intrigued me. What I liked is you sent me an email and they said, here's what I do and here's what I'd like to talk about. And you'd think my executive producer would kind of set these things up, but he doesn't. So here you are.
Yeah, right.
I'm just trying to make fun of Jimmy Gutz, our executive producer, who is a cryptic, mythic character who every once in a while shows up. So
yeah, right.
As a listener, do you get any of those inside jokes when I make them, or?
I think over time you start to pick them up, but I think a casual listener definitely would not get them.
All right, so we're going to pretend everyone's a casual listener. but Danny emailed me about all sorts of interesting stuff he does, which is super Garden Fork land. We're going to be talking about fermenting. He's working on a homestead layout and just gardening in the suburbs. And we'll talk for half an hour and see how it goes, you know?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Y'all, if you have any questions or anything, radio@gardenfork.tv is our email address, and we have a Facebook discussion group as well. Just go to Facebook and type in Garden Fork discussion group, or the link will be in the notes on this show. So just a little background, Danny. Where are you living?
So I live in Northern Virginia. So I know that Rick is also in Virginia, but he's kind of probably 200 or 250 miles away from me. So I'm much closer to D.C., than he is.
Okay, yeah, he's in Virginia Beach. So
yeah.
We were to draw the state of Virginia, he's more south than you are or more north?
Yeah, so if you look at it or think about it like a shoe facing to the left, he's kind of where the back of the heel is on the shoe. And I am kind of the top where the laces, where you tie your laces.
That's such a loaded statement, Danny.
Yeah.
Everyone, for you new people, Rick is one of our co-hosts, and I consistently poke fun at him. So there you go.
Yeah.
I'm just started making kombucha. My neighbor in Brooklyn, I bought a kombucha kit on Amazon. It was a freeze-dried kombucha thing.
Yeah, starter.
And I was like, well, yeah, I'm like, okay, well, I'll work on this. It was like $10 or something. I'm like, okay, I'll do this at one point. And it sat on the shelf. And then my neighbor, who's a flight attendant, he's going to be on the show, actually, very interesting stories. But he said, oh, I was in Portland, and this is going to be like a stereotypical thing.
Oh, yeah.
And my friend in Portland gave me a kombucha SCOBY, and I flew it back here. And it's this gelatinous, flesh tan-colored thing in a Ziploc bag, you know?
Yeah, it looks like a jellyfish.
And then so he started making it, and then I went to the Great Barrington, Massachusetts Fermentation Festival, which is this super hippie grassroots festival with the nicest people in the world there. And they were giving away SCOBYs for free, so I started it as well. And so I'm now making it. So what's your fermentation story?
Well, I'm not sure how I got into it, probably way back when starting homebrew beer. But since then, I've done a whole bunch of stuff. I've got probably four things fermenting in my kitchen right now, one in each corner, really. But this morning, I was working on my kombucha. So I've been doing that for a few years. I got a SCOBY from a lady at work, and I have since split that into three SCOBY. So I have 3 gallons of kombucha going at a time.
So could we walk people through what a SCOBY is and what exactly kombucha the drink is?
Yeah. So kombucha is, it really just is fermented sweet tea. So you'd start with, I do, you know, some water in a pot. I don't measure it, of course. I put a cup of sugar in and 6 tea bags. So bring that up to a boil and then turn it off and let it cool down. And then I mix that into a gallon of, or up to a gallon of water. And then I have the SCOBY in there. And the SCOBY, what it stands for is symbiotic colony of bacterial yeast, I think is what it is. So that's where they came up with that weird name. And that's just that, like you said, it's this gelatinous mass that sits on the top. So that
it looks like an alien.
Yeah, right. And it grows. It continues to grow. So that's sitting on the top of your gallon container, and it will ferment the sugar out of the sweet tea. And you end up with kind of a sour drink at the end of, you know, I do mine for between 3 or 4 weeks in the gallon jug, and then I bottle it, and then however long it takes me to drink it, usually a week or two. And it's figuring out that timing is the big trouble or the hardest part, because if you wait too long, it turns into vinegar.
Right, because it's essentially kind of sort of on its way to being vinegar.
Right. Yeah. So I think you mentioned in a recent show, some of yours was getting really sour. So the idea there, well, what I did instead of adding more sugar is I just started drinking it earlier. So I would ferment it for less than a month, or I started out with a month and then I went down to, you know, 3.5 weeks or so, more or less when I think of it, not of any specific time frame. And it's gotten much less sour.
So what are the, I'm told there are health benefits to drinking kombucha. Is that a real thing?
Well, I mean, I used to believe that all the probiotics helped a lot, but then I recently saw a scientific article saying that it doesn't really matter. So I'm not sure if it benefits you or not.
Oops.
So, but I do so many probiotic things, I would think that, or, you know, I would hope that I'm healthy.
The, another question that me and my neighbor had was, I cover mine with a paper towel and just put a rubber band around the top of the jar and I leave it. And he sprays his cover, this permeable cover, to basically keep like fungus gnats out of the kombucha with vinegar. Because that's what one of his instructions said. And I was like, I don't really think that's necessary. But what do you think?
I've never done that. I've only had issues with gnats when... So one of the problems you could have when you're fermenting it in your gallon jar is there's will be air bubbles that get under the SCOBY. And it could push it up into your paper towel.
Uh-huh. Or
I use a coffee filter. And I do the same thing you do. But if that coffee filter or that covering gets wet, then the gnats can get on there and, I guess, lay their eggs or whatever. So that's the only concern.
I had that
happen a while back, but not in the past couple of years.
Because I left an air gap of an inch or so between the SCOBY. Because the gallon jar I have has sloped sides at the top. It's like a mayonnaise jar or a pickle jar
of thing. Yeah, yeah. I use... it's a gigantic gallon glass jar. I think it was originally a kimchi jar,
from the
grocery store. So I've thought about recently, it comes with a plastic lid to just screw that on, but not, you know, cinch it down tight.
Yeah.
So that there's some, can let the carbon dioxide out. But I haven't made that switch.
So there's also flavorings that you can do with kombucha. My neighbor, and I've also seen online, the Brothers Green Eats YouTube channel has a really long video about kombucha, and they'll chop up like mango or orange or apple and throw it in there.
Yeah,
once you bottle it.
That's right. Yeah, I've done that with some good benefits and some explosive benefits. So you have to be careful. So I did 3 slices of a peach one time, and all of those bottles exploded when I didn't explode, but when I opened it, they shot all over the ceiling. So
right, it's like opening up a seltzer bottle that's been shaken up or something.
Exactly, exactly.
Because those fruits have sugar in them, and the yeast will react, will eat that, and then create carbon dioxide. And since the jar is sealed, that carbon dioxide is in solution, and as soon as you open that cap, it wants to go out. You know,
it's definitely carbonated, no doubt there.
Yeah, with
start out with like maybe one peach slice or three blueberries or something small in each bottle. I think I went overboard with three pieces of peach.
Well, it's the best way to learn is by doing, you know.
That's the truth.
Did you start out brewing home brewed beer and then moved into all this other stuff?
I think so. Yeah. So my dad always was making homebrew beer when, you know, I was growing up. So I always was exposed to that and just started doing it on my own. Wish I would have thought of it while I was in college instead of trying to figure out how to get beer otherwise. I could have done homebrew.
Yeah. We always think of these things afterward. Why is
that's
that?
The truth.
I was curious you mentioned hard cider because I actually make hard cider as well. And my batch of hard cider this year, the yeast did not kick in.
Yeah. So I have used the champagne yeast, get it in a little packet. That's
the dry packet.
Yeah. And I've used that. It's been hit or miss. I haven't really figured out how to make a good batch of cider. I've got cider in my, storage that's probably 2 years old. 'Cause I think of better things to drink.
Well, I have found that the hard cider, so basically I go, there's an orchard up the road and they press their own cider. And I bring one of those 5 gallon plastic water bottles that the water cooler companies use.
Yeah.
And my neighbor threw out a bunch of them and he didn't want the deposits and the company didn't come take them back. So I took them and I filled up one of those and I left quite a bit of head space. I didn't fill it all the way to the top of the neck of the thing. And for several years, I've been quite good at it. I bought a liquid yeast and then a dry yeast. And then this year, I pitched the dry yeast and it didn't take. And then I pitched it the next week. It didn't take. So now I've got 4.5 gallons of bad cider in my basement.
Yeah. Oh, man. Do you do anything to kill off any natural yeast that would be in there?
Oh, I do. I put in the tablet. I can't remember what the tablet's called, but I get it from the home. Midwest Supplies is a great homebrew store, by the way, in Minnesota. And are they called Campton tablets?
Okay.
Which I think is just a sulfite.
And you just drop it in there and let it go for a couple of days?
Yeah, you shake the heck out of it. Well, I wait 24 hours because that's what the instructions said. Maybe I should wait longer.
Okay. Well, I don't have any idea. But so you just drop that in there.
You're a perfect garden fork if you have no idea.
Hey, but it didn't work this year, so maybe you need 48 hours next year.
Yeah. What I have found with the cider is after it's fermented and I bottle it, and I try it like a month later if it's been what we call bottle conditioned. That's a big word. It tastes kind of like meh. You know, it's like, But if I wait a year, I just have those bottles in a milk crate in the root cellar, and I take a bottle out, and it's quite good.
Really? Does it settle out? Is it clearer or anything?
Yeah, okay. Definitely there's the yeast is settled to the bottom. And I've bought a bunch of different ciders. Actually, at that Great Barrington Fermentation Festival, there is a cidery selling their hard cider. So I bought a bottle of that. And I'm always curious, do theirs taste better? And I've realized that hard cider tastes like a dry white wine that isn't overly sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Good cider. I don't have a whole lot of experience with good cider. I just have my homebrew stuff.
So. It's something to do. And I think I'm wondering if the orchard up by me has frozen any of their cider. Because if you put it into plastic gallon jugs and then put it in the freezer, it'll freeze and you can sell it at a later date. And I have to ask them if they have any more because I'd still like to try a batch.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. A couple of months afterwards, you can start it again.
So if anyone has any suggestions for us, radio@gardenfork.tv is the email address. And Danny can attest to the fact that I actually do respond to emails.
Yeah.
It takes a while. I have your original email here, so it was really great. So it was,
yeah.
It's always kind of fun that every once in a while you open up the email inbox and you're like, oh, look at that. So. Hey, real quick here. I was wondering if you wanted to join the Garden Fork email list. It's Maura Eric. I don't know if you want that or not. But the best way to do that, if you go to the gardenfork.tv site, there are signups all over the place. There should be one on every page. Also, in the show notes for this show, if you're listening to it in the iTunes app or one of the other podcast app, to click on the little, I think you click on the little text thumbnail of the show and the notes will pop up and there's a link in there. Or just go to gardenfork.tv and there should be a sign up there. All right. Thank you. The other thing that you do is sourdough.
Yeah. So I got a sourdough starter a few years ago as a gift, and I've amazingly kept it alive to date. And I make sourdough bread, and actually more often than not, we end up making a sort of a sourdough crepe. So
oh, wow.
When I'm feeding the sourdough starter and, you know, it continues to grow, right? So I make it fairly liquidy and then just pour it into a pan, and it's kind of a sourdough crepe. So we'll put peanut butter or Nutella in there and eat it for breakfast.
Nutella is like a gateway drug to chocolate. You know, it's just
yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
I can't keep that stuff in the house.
Yeah, it's definitely a problem.
So you're actually taking, because when you have sourdough, you need to keep feeding it, and you get to the point where you just have too much of the starter and you have to, you either give it away or pour it down the drain or something or put it in the compost.
Right.
So you're taking your excess starter and literally putting that in like a crepe pan or a fry pan and making a real thin crepe out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I make it very thin, so that it's very runny. And then I just, you know, pour it out into the pan and it kind of spreads to cover the pan. And then, you know, wait a minute or two and flip it and it's ready to go.
That's great. I was given a starter by my sister and I managed to kill it. But what I heard on the Gastropod podcast a while ago, they went along on this, I just call it a science project in the Netherlands, maybe? It was in Northern Europe. And they gave a sourdough starter to bakers around the world, like six or seven of them. And they wanted them to work with it. And then they all brought their sourdough starters back to, let's say, Amsterdam. And the scientists swabbed the baker's hands. And then they took samples of the sourdough starters. And they found that the sourdoughs had the same organisms in the sourdough than it is on the hands of the bakers. And they were unique to each baker.
Wow.
So I don't know if it's the hands inoculating the sourdough or the sourdough inoculating the hands. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and then, you know, all of the yeast from, or all of the naturally occurring yeast from wherever they are geographically, right?
Totally. Interesting, huh? So
yeah.
How do you not kill sourdough starter?
Well, I just feed it every week or two and leave it in the fridge.
That's too easy.
Yeah, so not a whole lot. I don't really do much that's scientific, so can't give a lot of guidance there. But I just, you know, feed it and feed it from some flour, add some water, and mix it up, put it back in the fridge. And when I pull it back out, it's usually got kind of a brownish, grayish liquid on the top. I guess that's excess water and waste.
Yeah.
So I pour that out and then add more flour and a little bit more water. And then at a certain point, you know, I'll have plenty or more than I need. And then I'll make a crepe with it or, you know, build it up to actually make a loaf of sourdough bread.
So when you're going to make a loaf of bread with the sourdough, do you need to bring the sourdough starter out and let it come to room temperature, or can you How do you like get it rolling? Get it.
I bring it out and feed it and then leave it out on the counter for about 12 hours or so. And I might feed it a second time. But actually, I spoke with my wife's uncle, who also does sourdough, and he was saying that what he's read is you should feed it and then wait up to 3 days for all of the acids and the fermentation to happen. And that's the best time to use it to make a loaf.
Huh.
So you usually, if I leave it on the counter and I'm feeding it every 12 hours or so. But he made it sound like you can feed it once and then wait up to 3 days and then use it to start your loaf.
Wow. This is because I was always thinking you had to feed it like every day. But, you know, it just sounded. The problem is, I think I read the Tartine Bread book from San Francisco, Chad Robertson.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's deep into it.
Right. Yeah. And I, like you've said on so many podcasts and videos, it's like you just kind of have to get going and try it and you'll figure it out. You don't have to try and replicate the experts because then you'll never start, or I will never start.
Yeah. If all else fails, read directions, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So the last of our fermentation is ginger beer, which I have never made.
Yeah. So that's actually one of the things I'm most excited about. So I started with some organic ginger because it's still got all of the yeast and, you know, all of that stuff in it. And I started a ginger starter. It's called a bug, which is another, you know, you wouldn't necessarily want to eat something that's called a ginger bug. But you start with this organic ginger, sugar, and water, and you let it start to ferment, and it bubbles voraciously. And
in like a mason jar, you just
so like I said, I have a gallon jar for my kombucha.
Yeah,
I have a half gallon variety for my ginger beer. So I just have a half gallon glass jar that I shred ginger and put it in there and add some sugar and water, and it will bubble quite a bit. And I leave that in the fridge as well. So I pull that out a day or so before I want to make ginger beer. And you boil, it's fairly similar to kombucha. You boil, I use about 3 or 4 inches of a root of ginger with a cup of sugar. I mix it brown sugar and white sugar. And I boil that, let it cool. Then I mix in a cup of the ginger starter. And then a cup, or I've gotten down to about a half a cup of lemon juice.
Mm-hmm.
And you mix all of that in a gallon container and fill it up with water. And then you let that ferment on the counter for 2 days. You put it in a bottle for 2 days, and then you throw it in the fridge. And it's very, I guess you can adjust how sharp or spicy it is by the amount of ginger you put in when you boil it in the beginning.
Right.
But it's very carbonated. It's I like it better than the store-bought variety, but it's kind of like Maine's root. I think that's the brand, Maine's Root Ginger Beer.
Mm-hmm.
So it tastes like that. It's very spicy and very carbonated. It's a little more sugary tasting than the kombucha, but I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to try that because the kombucha, I find it fascinating, but just the flavor isn't my thing.
Yeah.
So I actually, my neighbor wants my kombucha SCOBY, so I think I'm gonna hand it over.
Yeah, and switch over to ginger beer maybe.
Well, I'm intrigued by this, so I'll have to. I have a couple of books on making fermented stuff, so maybe there's a ginger beer chapter in there. So I'll have to take a look at
so
that.
I have Sandor Katz's The Art of Fermentation, and he talks about it in there.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
he was on the show a while ago.
Really.
I'll
have to go back in the archives and look for that one.
I'll link to the it's on the website. I'll link to in the show notes for this episode, guys. If you're playing the Apple podcast app and the Garden Fork Radio icon is up, which I think is one of my Labradors, if you just tap on that, it flips and the text describing the show shows up. So there'll be links in there for the world of Eric. But yeah, he was on. He's just a very giving person. I mean, He could probably be commercially a lot more successful than he is, but I think he's just more about spreading the gospel.
Right. Yeah. And he does a great job of it.
Good for him. So the last thing I wanted to touch on is you're planning a homestead with some land you just bought.
That's right. Yeah. So we live, like I said, we live in Virginia. My parents live in Maryland on the Eastern Shore. So a little bit south of Delaware. So that's where I grew up, and that's where we eventually want to end up, my wife and I. So we've been looking for property for a few years, and this piece of property popped up this summer, and we purchased it. So it's 27 acres.
Wow.
With about 4 acres of field that in the past has been soybeans or corn. So we're going to end up building a house on a portion of that field. And I want to have a huge garden and maybe a small orchard, and all of that stuff. So that's down the line, but I'm thinking about what to do now, because I've heard, you know, the best time to plant a fruit tree was 20 years ago.
I was just going to say, get the trees in.
Yeah. And the second best time is today. So maybe early this spring or late winter, I'll get some apple trees out there. And maybe some other stuff. I've got fig trees in pots here. And so I'd like to get those in the ground and maybe plant some chestnut trees out there as well.
The Fedco Seeds, which is fedcoseeds.com, has a subsidiary called Fedco Trees, perhaps. Maybe I could look it up while I'm yakking. But they're a great source. They specialize in heirloom varieties, but they have there maybe are 30 different kinds they sell this in their saplings, and they're 3 to 5 feet long with a bare root, and they ship them in like February and March.
That was my question. When should I be getting them to get them in the ground?
Because these are shipped and they're dormant, and they have these great instructions, and they're wrapped in shredded wet newspaper. Like if you put newspaper through a paper shredder, you know, an office paper shredder. And I've planted winterberry and elderberry plants from them, and they're super healthy. They're grown by farmers, and we're, you know, by buying them from them, we're keeping open space open. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's definitely something I want to do. I think I went on their website and was overwhelmed by the amount of apple trees that they have, and I couldn't even, you know, figure out, do I want... I mean, I haven't heard of 95% of these varieties, so I don't even know where to start.
If you go to fedcoseeds.com and then click on it, says trees and plants for spring, I'm pretty sure somewhere in here you can download a PDF, which makes it a little easier to browse. And in that, I have the printed catalog. They have a chart showing the different apple varieties and what they're good for and what kind of climate they're good for. You know, are they a cider apple? Are they a tasting apple? Are they a baking apple or eating apple, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that we did recently with me or with us thinking about these different types of trees is I went to the grocery store and I just bought 2 apples of like 5 varieties. So I got a Honeycrisp apple and a Pink Lady apple and, you know, 3 or 4 other varieties. And we just tried it. And it was similar to tasting wine or something like that. We're just talking about, oh, this is sweet or this is crisp. So that was a really fun thing. It costs like, you know, $4. So that might be something that you could give a try, even if you're not planning on buying apple trees, but just something fun to do.
Oh, totally. We've done that with garlic before when we've planted garlic and then harvested it. So I'm at the Fedco Trees subsection of the Fedco Seeds site. And it says, we ship according to planting zone, beginning with southern states around March 25th. So you're southern, well, you're more south than most of us here up in New England. So yeah, March 25th. And you can wait till the ground thaws. Their instructions come with the dormant plants. And if you want to keep them dormant, you want to keep them cold in a dark place. Just they don't get too wet or else you get some mold growth. Okay. But yeah, I'd go check it out.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds great.
So as far as the land, is there when you went to look at it, had it already been zoned for a residential home, or was it zoned farmland and forest, or?
So it's zoned agricultural, but they did do a percolation test, or it was in process.
Uh-huh.
So they were working on that when we first looked at it, and we just made an offer contingent upon that perk test passing.
Very smart. So everyone, if you're wondering what a perk test is, you're checking your soil for the ability to put in a septic tank. And if that perk test fails, you can still put a septic in, but it's one of those above the ground kind, which look like a helicopter landing pad in your backyard. Yeah. And it has a pump also. There's a pump that is involved with that. And that pump, when that pump fails, you have to replace it. But if you have a perk test and you can have a below ground one, this depends on your county or in your state. It's a much less expensive septic system to put in.
Right. So they had in the center, say, if you think of our field as a rectangle, in the exact center is where they put this or did the test. So I understand we can move that in the future, but we would need a new perk test done.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they placed it right in the center of the field, but basically they tested this square. It's 10,000 square feet, so 100 by 100, and they tested that so the septic system could go there. But when you actually do it, a septic system needs, I guess, 5,000 square feet. So it's just half of that space, but they make you test 10,000 so that if your first septic system fails, then you have enough space that's approved to put a second septic system in.
Exactly. When we bought our home here, upstate is, it was part of a larger piece of property, and they carved off that property, but they made sure to leave with the residence, the home, enough land such that if the buyer had to replace the septic that's here, there was enough room to put in a second septic field. And that is really key important.
Yes.
Total complete tangent, but our town is so old that the general store, the septic field and tank is across the main road, goes under the town hall, and then under the parking lot of the town hall.
Wow.
It's on the other side of the road, like 500 feet away.
Wow. I hope you never have issues with that. That's a lot of digging up to fix.
Well, they had a scare, but they fixed it. But just so you know, when you're thinking about buying an old home, and there's other in the town center, there's a cluster of these beautiful old homes, and several of them have lead pipes coming into the basement from the different springs, the artisanal springs, artesian springs that are around the town.
Wow.
Yeah, lead water mains. That's always a good thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, geez.
Well, cool. We've filled up like a half hour of people's driving time. I think maybe they're at work by now.
Great.
This was really enjoyable. Maybe you can come back on and give us an update about what you've been doing.
Oh, I would love to.
And if you have questions for us, it's radio@gardenfork.tv. And if you have a question for Danny, if you want to forward it to me, I'll forward it to him because he doesn't want to be quite as public as me, and I don't blame him for that. So not everyone wants to be on the internet, but this is great. It's kind of neat when people email, and it's almost always been they have super interesting subjects, and then I don't have to do any preparation. So
that's great on both fronts.
So we're going to go visit after this. We're going to go visit. There's a working farm up the road that sells at the farmers markets, and they're having an open house today. So we're going to go over there, and it's a beautiful barn with these really tiny windows at the top. And we've never, it's a working farm. You don't just walk in there, but today is an open house and we want to see this really beautiful barn. So that's going to be fun. So
are you going to take the camera and make some videos?
No, people up here get a little weird about that.
Oh, okay.
It's not like New York City where you just whip, say, hey, look at us, All of a sudden, they're like, what are you doing,
Yeah.
I'll take some pictures. I'll share them on the Instagram feed. So
Great.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you want to go to iTunes and say nice things about us, that would always be good. So, all right. Go out and make it a great day. Thank you, Danny.
Yep. Have a good one.
Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from UniqueTracks.com.